Hey everybody, it's Matt. Welcome or welcome back to the Journey Church podcast. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you can automatically get our weekly episodes. And you might want to go ahead and subscribe to our Journey YouTube channel as well. You'll find messages, music, interviews, inspiring stories, and more for you all right there. Now, I hope this episode helps you take your next step in following Jesus. All right, today we are wrapping up this series we've been in, You're Not the Boss of Me, and I'll catch you up real quick if you haven't been with us. But the tagline for the series is how to say no to the emotions that compete for control. Specifically, how we say no to the emotions that compete for control of our mind, our mood, and our mouth. Now, we can all relate to that, don't we? Because you have had moments where you had thoughts you did not want to think and you couldn't stop thinking them. You know, thoughts that you're like, I just wish I didn't, but you just couldn't end it. And people said, just focus on something else. Think about something else. And you just couldn't do it. And the reason you didn't maybe know this, but the reason was because there were some emotions internally in you that were controlling your mind. They were controlling your thoughts. They were directing what you focused on. The same thing's true with our mood. You ever been in a situation where you were just in a mood and you didn't want to be in a mood and you wish you could get out of the mood and you just couldn't figure out how to get out of the mood? That's because some emotions, some unhealthy emotions were driving that. I do not have to explain how unhealthy emotions control our mouth, because we've all experienced that. And we've all been on the other side of that, and controlling what we say and when we say it, you know, how we say it. You're probably going to get to experience that in the next 7 days. Congratulations, that's coming, right? Because you'll get together with family and somebody's mouth's going to be controlled by an emotion and off you go, you know, or somebody's mood. So we're all, it's part of why we wanted to do this series. We're all living in the middle of this right now. We're all having to navigate it. And the thing that makes this unique is that Jesus said the solution is not to just get better at monitoring our behavior. This is what we all tend to do. We all are taught, whatever's going on inside of you, just learn to not let it show. And we walk around with a filter, if you will, that tries to keep all that stuff rattling around in us, try to keep all those emotions down there. We try to push them down, hold them down. I'm not going to let it. Matter of fact, some of you have already started pepping yourself up. You've already started giving yourself a bit of a motivational talk. Because in the next 7 days, you're going to be gathering with some extended family, and you have already told yourself, I'm not going to let them punch my button. I'm not going to lose my temper. I'm not going to lose control. I'm not going to say that this year. It went so bad last year. I'm not going to say it this year. You know, you've tried to convince yourself and amp yourself up to be better this year, and really what you're doing is you're trying to reinforce your filter. You're trying to tell yourself, that filter, it can hold, it can hold, it can hold. And you know what happens? It's going to happen. That filter gets a tear, doesn't it? Because they say the thing and you're like, well, forget it. You know, I'm just going to go ahead. So Jesus' point was, hey, the way you solve this is not to get a stronger filter. It's not to monitor your behavior better. Jesus said the way you solve this is to monitor your heart. Because according to him, out of the heart flow all the issues of life. What's in you, he said, is going to come out of you no matter what you do. So if you actually want to address some of this stuff, you got to deal with what's going on inside. So we've navigated over the last few weeks through what it looks like to keep guilt from being the boss of us, to keep anger from being the boss of us, to keep fear from being the boss of us. Today, we're going to wrap up in a little bit of a different direction, all right? I want us to talk about a collection of unhealthy emotions, and what makes these different is they disguise themselves as virtues. We're going to look at a collection of unhealthy emotions that have a tendency to mask themselves as loving, as caring, as thoughtful, as compassionate. And so these are emotions, you know, some of the others you're like, I know I should change. These are emotions that you convince yourself, no, there's nothing wrong with this. This is exactly what I should do. And the way it most often plays out is this scenario. Think about a time when you watched someone that you loved, somebody you cared about, somebody you were close to, family member, friend, whatever it may have been. You watched them making decisions that you knew they were going to regret one day. Now, I'm not talking about the little things. I'm talking about the things that you're like, I think that might blow up your marriage. I think if you do that one day when you do get married, you're going to really regret this season. I think if you make that decision, it's going to create financial impact that's going to cost you for years to come. I think if you keep doing that, if you keep being around them, if you keep going down this road, you're going to end up in a place where there's a price to pay for years. Okay, we've all experienced that, right? And what do you feel when you're in the middle of that? Well, these unhealthy emotions begin to rattle around in your heart and mind. But we don't want to name them for what they are. So instead, as we think about, should I say something or should I be silent? These emotions scream, be silent. And we convince ourselves being silent is the most loving, caring thing to do. So we say things like, well, I shouldn't interfere because it's none of my business. And they didn't ask for my opinion. And I don't want to be bossy. And I don't want them to think I don't love them. And I don't want to come across as judgmental. But behind all of those explanations or rationalizations for why we ignore having hard conversations, there are some emotions. There's the emotion of fear, the fear of rejection. Oh my gosh, if I have this hard conversation, what if they just cut me off? What if they don't talk to me anymore? There's a discomfort of conflict. For some of you, this is so powerful. It's like you just don't want any sense of conflict. You'd rather have pretend peace is actual conflict. So it's just, I'm going to ignore it. I don't want to deal with the discomfort of that. There's the apprehension of confrontation. How am I even going to have this conversation? Oh man, if I sit down with them and I start talking to them about this, I don't even know how to approach it. And I don't want to turn into a fight. All of those emotions tend to cause us to convince ourselves the most loving, caring, thoughtful thing to do is to be silent instead of speaking up, instead of showing up, instead of doing the difficult thing that might be the best thing for that person in the long run. And then there's one other emotion, and none of us want to admit this is true of us, but some of us know this is true of us. There's also indifference. For some of us, if we're honest, it's like, I just don't really care. I mean, it's their life. They can do whatever they want to. I don't care. It's not going to impact me. They go ahead. I don't care. And if you're not a follower of Jesus, if you don't consider yourself a church person, you pick the perfect Sunday to come today, because number one, I would not even presume to begin to tell you what you ought to do in those situations. It is entirely up to you to do whatever you want to do. And the great news for you is everything else we're going to talk about today from this point forward, you get a free pass on because you are not a follower of Jesus. So you don't have to do what Jesus tells the rest of us to do. But for those of us who are followers of Jesus, our leader did not leave us with the option of ignoring these emotions and remaining silent. He didn't leave us with the option of convincing ourselves, no, it's actually a virtuous thing, a loving thing, a caring thing. I'll just pray for him. I'll just hope, and I'll just, you know, keep being there. No, he told us we had to do the difficult, uncomfortable thing, to have a hard conversation with somebody that we care about deeply whenever we see they're about to trip themselves up. Specifically, the way Jesus said it to all of us was this. He said, if your brother or sister sins, he's not talking about a little brother or sister, he's talking about somebody who's a part of God's family. So he's just referring to his followers, okay? If your brother or sister sins, Jesus says, go and point out their fault. To which most of us are like, that sounds like torture. That's so uncomfortable. That's going to be incredibly awkward. Matter of fact, it sounds a bit harsh and judgmental. Jesus, why would you even ask us to do that? And so what I want to do for the next few minutes is I want to back up and I want to give you a little context behind why Jesus would ask us to do something that's so difficult for most of us to do. So what prompted this comment by Jesus was he was hanging out with his disciples, his closest friends, and they're sitting there talking, and he notices the conversation among these guys shifts to which one of them is going to be the greatest in Jesus' kingdom. Like, he's not making this up. This is literally what they're talking about with him right there. They start debating which of them is going to end up being the greatest one day. It's like, are we dealing with a bunch of children or what? You know, it was just so odd. And when they were thinking about Jesus' kingdom, they were not thinking about something up there or out there. They were thinking about something right here. They believed, their perspective was, Jesus had shown up on earth at that time to literally establish a kingdom the way they understood kingdoms. And the way they understood kingdoms was the Roman Empire, because that's who occupied them in Israel. So they're thinking, oh, Jesus is going to overthrow the Romans. He's going to set up his own kingdom. So why would they care who is the greatest? Well, because if they were tops among all Jesus' friends, they got the best job in the kingdom, right? They got the most perks. They got all the power. So they're like, okay, we'll let you be king of the kingdom. Thank you. But Jesus, beyond that, can you put me right next to you? So they're literally debating this. And Jesus hears them. And he has had this conversation on more than one occasion because they have had this debate on more than one occasion. He's like, I don't get it. I don't know how I'm going to get through to them about this. So he decides to use a visual, okay? So he walks over, and apparently somewhere, wherever they are, there's some kids playing. He walks over, and he grabs one of the children, and he brings him, and he sits him right, this child, right down the middle of the circle with all his disciples. He says, I hear you guys are talking about who's greatest in my kingdom. They're like, yes, hopefully it's me. You know, go ahead and tell us. He says, no, no, no. The one who's greatest in the kingdom is like this little child. And they're all silent. They're scratching their heads. They can't figure it out. And Jesus goes, yeah, yeah. If you want to be great in my kingdom, then you have to have faith and trust in me like a little child. You have to have humility like a little child. A child's never too proud to come up to their parent and go, hey, I need something. Hey, help. Jesus goes, you got to have humility like a little child. You got to have a servant's heart like a little child. You want to be great in my kingdom? Those are the things that mark greatness in my kingdom. And y'all, none of y'all have it because clearly you're full of pride and arrogance. You're debating over which one of you is the greatest. It's pretty obvious. So you're going to have to be like this little child. And then Jesus decides he's going to launch into a conversation to help them understand why they have to let go of their pride and instead embrace caring for people the way Jesus loves people. So here's what he says to them next. He says, if anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble. Now, let's pause because he just took a quick shift, okay? He's not talking about the little one anymore like the child. Now he's saying, okay, no, no. If any of you guys do something that causes a person who's just started following me, who's just started figuring it out, who's just become part of the family and they're growing, if you call anybody who causes one of those newer followers of me, those young followers of me, to stumble, he says, well, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. And I think the disciples are like, cover the kid's ears. That's terrible. It's like, that is a drastic right turn, isn't it? Jesus went morbid in a hurry. But he's not being literal. Let's make that clear. This is exaggeration on Jesus' part to help get a point across. And the point is, you got to be careful. He's talking to his followers, remember? He's going, if you're going to follow me, you have to be careful not to do anything or say anything that would trip up somebody who's trying to follow me, that would cause somebody who's curious and exploring following me, that would cause them to walk away or lose their way. He's going, whatever you do, don't do that. It'd be way better. It'd be way better for something else to happen to you than you be the person who did that to them. Matter of fact, he gives them a warning. He says, woe to the world because of the things that cause people to stumble. In other words, there are things we all experience in life we can't avoid, and it trips us up. Such things, Jesus said, they must come. You're not going to avoid all of them. But woe to the person through whom they come. What Jesus is trying to help them understand, and the reason he's doing this is because at the root of this behavior is pride and arrogance. Jesus is saying, listen, you guys are so proud, you better be careful because you're going to end up being the name that somebody mentions when they tell their regret story. If you're not careful, you're going to do something that causes somebody to lose their way, to walk away, to trip, to fall, to stumble. And they're going to have to deal with all the consequences, all the regret of their decision. But when they talk about why their marriage fell apart, you don't want them mentioning your name. When they talk about why their relationship with their kids is broken, you don't want them saying your name. When they talk about why they are where they are, trying to put all the pieces back together and how painful this season of life has been, you don't want to come up in that conversation. When they talk about how long it's going to take them to recover financially, you don't want to be mentioned in that. This is his point. You should pay attention and make sure there's nothing you ever say or do that would cause somebody to stumble, to trip, to fall, to step out of bounds, to lose their way, or to walk away from their faith in Jesus. And then after he gives this warning to them, and they're trying to process it, and of course, they can't put it all together. But he says, all right, you don't want to do that for somebody else, but let me tell you this, you also don't want to get in your own way. And he gives them this warning. He says, well, if your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, so you do something that trips you up, cut it off and throw it away. Again, he's just exaggerating here. It's better for you to enter life maimed and crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. He says, if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out, throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into the fire of hell. Now, you'll understand what he's talking about here because we have all had moments in our lives where we invited something into our life that we thought we could handle and we thought would not trip us up. We thought we had total control of it, when in reality, it gained total control of us. And it caused us to lose our way. All of us could tell these stories. And you know, when you look back and you start telling that story, you understand Jesus' point. Jesus' point was, it doesn't have to be a bad thing, but if there's something that has the potential to trip you up, you should get it out of your life. Don't play around with fire. You should remove yourself, separate yourself from that thing, from that person, from that situation. And this is exactly how we talk, isn't it, when we talk about our regret stories. In retrospect, we go, well, if I knew then what I know now, I mean, everybody was telling me, but I thought I could control it. I thought I wasn't going to be like everybody else. But if I knew then what I know now, I'd delete that number. I'd have never sent that text. I'd have never taken that first drink. I didn't think it was a big deal, but for me, it ended up in addiction. So if I could go back and do it again, I'd never even start down that road because it caused me to lose my way. I'd have never even entered into that friendship. I'd have just said no. You know, I'd have never had that conversation because, oh my gosh, look where it ended up. We've all been there and experienced that. And Jesus' point is, hey, pride causes you to go, oh, I think I can handle it. I don't think it's a big deal. I know with other people it never turns out well, but for me, I'll be fine. He's going, no. Have enough humility to go, I'm going to look for the things in my life that if I hold on to them, I'm inviting potential chaos and pain into my life, and I'm just going to remove them. It may be fine for other people, but I can't go there. I'm not doing that. I'm avoiding it. To which is, you know, if you're listening to this, you might think, and maybe Jesus' followers were thinking, well, problem is, I've already done some stuff that caused other people to stumble. And I've already done some stuff that caused me to lose my way. So the warning's a little too late. I'm already dealing with consequences. So Jesus, how do you feel about me when I violated everything you just said? What are you going to do to me when I've already been a problem? And Jesus says, well, I'll tell you exactly what I'm going to do to you. Here's what he told him next. What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go to look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, Jesus said, that shepherd is happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that did not wander off. And then he makes his point. In the same way, your Father in heaven's not willing that any of these little ones should perish. Now, I don't want you to miss this. This is pretty extraordinary. This was Jesus' way of saying, listen, all that sin that's got you in the position you're in, all that sin that caused them to wander off or to stumble or to walk away, I'm going to a cross and I'm going to pay the debt, the penalty for all that sin. It's going to cost me my life. And in spite of that, when you sin, I'm coming after you, not to pay you back. I'm coming after you to win you back. I'm coming after you to search and rescue you. I'm coming after you to try to bring you back to the forgiveness, to the peace, to the joy, to the grace that you need. That is exactly how Jesus feels about you. When you have stumbled, when you've wandered off, or when you've done something that's caused someone else to lose their way. And then, with all of that as the context, Jesus looks at him and he says, now that you guys understand how much I care about you, how valuable you are to me, and now you understand that you understand how important humility is, I want you, when you see somebody else wandering off, to join me in searching for them and trying to bring them back. That's why if your brother or your sister sins, I'm telling you to go and point out their fault just between the two of you. Not in a judgmental way, not in a harsh way. Go and talk to them about it. Go and tell them, I'm concerned about you. I'm afraid one day you're going to regret this. Hey, I don't even know if you see this could be a problem, but I'm telling you from the outside, I think it could be a problem. This may cost you more than you won't pay. This may cost you the respect of your kids. This may cost you a marriage. This may cost you a future relationship. This may cost you opportunities down the road. And Jesus says, if they listen to you, you've won them over. You've spared them a ton of pain. You've saved them from so much heartache and heartbreak. But notice he said if, because this is Jesus' way of saying, hey, I'm telling you, I'm asking you to go have a hard conversation, and I'm telling you at the same time, it probably isn't gonna work. You say, well, okay, but if I do it, I'm good? Jesus says, well, actually, no, I want you to go do it, and if they don't listen to you, there's a step two. He says, if they will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by a testimony of two or three witnesses, which was just his way of saying, hey, if they don't listen to you, if they don't listen to you, then you get a couple other people who care and love them deeply, and the two or three of you go and try to get their attention. Well, I don't think they'll listen to that either. She says, okay, give it a shot. If they don't listen, if they still, he says, if they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. Now, real quick, just to calm everybody down and alleviate any fears, that does not mean stand up here on stage, okay? This is a poor translation of a Greek word here. The church, the way we know it today, did not exist in this form when Jesus said this. This is a Greek word that literally just means community, movement or assembly or gathering of people. So Jesus' point is, if a couple of you go and they won't listen, then how about you go find all the people, their family and friends, all their close-knit circle of community, and all of y'all figure out a way to try to intervene and get their attention. And he says, if they refuse, next slide, if they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. I should explain this real quick. He's not saying shun them. He's not saying hate them. He's not saying don't speak to them anymore. Because that's not how Jesus treated pagans or tax collectors, was it? No, no, here's all he's saying. If you give it three shots and they won't listen, you have just learned something. You have been talking to them based on the assumption that they value what you value. That they look at the world and see the world and make decisions about their life based on the same value system you have. If you have three conversations around that and they say, I don't care, I'm not listening, what they have just communicated to you is, I am living my life based on a different value system than yours. So just like you would never expect somebody who's not a follower of Jesus to act like a follower of Jesus, why would they value what Jesus values? In the same way, what he's saying is, at this point, you can relax. Weight's off your shoulders. You can just love them, be friends with them, and wait for God to intervene in their lives. They're going to have to figure out for themselves that their value system is faulty. So, the reason I wanted to talk about this is my guess, as we talk, someone came to mind. A hard conversation that you maybe have been avoiding. A hard conversation that you're going to try to avoid over the next 7 days. A hard conversation that you're going to try to dance around when everybody gets together for Christmas. If you're not a follower of Jesus, dance all you want. Figure out how you want to do this. But for those of us who follow Jesus, he says, no, no, no. You can't let fear and discomfort, apprehension, or indifference convince you that being silent is the loving thing to do. It is not. If you really care about that person, you got to speak with clarity, because clarity is kindness. You got to speak with love. You got to be gentle. But you need to have a conversation, because that's what love requires you to do. So, I would just encourage you to pay attention whenever everything inside of you is trying to convince you it's none of your business. I'm not going to share my opinion. I'm just going to love them. Silence is not loving in those situations. Would you instead have the hard conversation with them, because it just might be the best thing for them that prevents them from stumbling, tripping up, walking away, losing their way, and having to pay a price down the road for it. Let me pray for us. Father, this is certainly tough to do, and every situation feels a little different, so give us the wisdom to know how to process this. Give us the wisdom to know what to do in these situations we're going to encounter this week or the next week or down the road. And then give us the courage we need to do the loving thing, to show up, to speak up, because we care. And we ask all these things in your name. Amen.
Hey, if you'd like more content like this, subscribe to our YouTube channel and download our Journey app to access all of our recent message content. And our app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend. For more information on our church or to find our app or our YouTube channel, just visit journeycalway.com. That's journeycalway.com. Thanks for listening.